There's been considerable hype surrounding the impending G8 meeting in Scotland, as well as the Make Poverty History campaign. In this hype, Tony Blair and his Chancellor Gordon Brown are cast as the doers of good. Bono and Geldof play bards to herald their deeds. But there also have been embarrassments. There's the agreement by the 450-member NGO Make Poverty History campaign that they won't mention any anti-war message that would embarrass Blair. There's Bob Geldof's Live 8 concert series, so overwhelmingly full of white musicians. And there are the white wristbands being marketed as the campaign symbol, which were revealed to have been made by forced labor in China. To discuss the G8 meeting and to go beyond the promotional hype and the revealing embarrassments, we've reached Dennis Brutus in Johannesburg. He's a renowned poet of liberation, a fighter against apartheid, who was imprisoned on the infamous Robben Island in the early 60s, where he broke stones with Nelson Mandela. Good evening, Dennis, and welcome to the Red Eye program. It's really an honor to speak with you, and we appreciate your making time available.
Good evening, and good to be on your program. I'm glad to have the opportunity.
Now, beyond the hype and the embarrassments, what would you say is the meat of the issue that progressive people need to grasp about the G8 summit meeting?
Okay, as you know, this is a pretty complex area. But quickly, on the question of the cancellation of debt, which is where a lot of the hype is directed, the talk is of a promise of $41 billion to be cancelled as the debt of about 18 countries, of the most highly impoverished countries, and this is what the cheering is about. But you've got to look at the fine print. When you look at that, you see two interesting things. One, that a lot of this is promised and not necessarily will be delivered. We've had some unhappy experiences in the past. And even more seriously, in order to get the debt cancelled, countries have had to jump through certain hoops and to qualify to be called HIPCs or HIPCs, highly indebted poor countries. And here's the catch. In order to qualify to be a HIPC, you have to follow some very strict rules laid down by the World Bank and the IMF. And among those rules, you have to cut your budget for education, for health, for housing. And so, in fact, although you're being given something with one hand, it's being taken away with the other hand. And, of course, while we have all this hype of Bob Geldof and the people with white headbands or wristbands, we're losing sight of the central issue, and that is that countries will be even more closely tied to the rules of the G8, the World Bank, and the IMF than they were before. And those rules actually caused very serious impoverishment in Africa, in Asia, in South America, through what are called structural adjustment programs. So for most of us, literally millions all over the world, this is not a time for celebration. This is a time for yelling. We want real action instead of a kind of public relations exercise.
Now, there's one of the large international NGOs, Oxfam, has a lot of credibility. I'm wondering what its approach is towards the G8 and the various focus on debt reduction, etc., rather than on structural adjustment programs, which are integral to those promises of debt reduction.
Right. The Oxfam is one of the biggest of the NGOs or non-governmental organizations, and it has a good deal of credibility. Unfortunately, on this issue, they really are focusing on a kind of a palliative, an approach which is almost like a charity approach. because it's not getting down to the real issues. And the real issues are that the African countries and the underdeveloped countries are being punished while their resources are being exploited by the industrialized countries. I've worked with Oxfam, and in fact I met with a new international director fairly recently. He's been here in Johannesburg talking about getting ready for what they call the road to Hong Kong, when the next WTO, World Trade Organization meeting. And I was quite blunt. I had to say, look, this kind of ambiguity where you focus on patchwork and Band-Aid and don't approach the real problem, this is no help to the people in Africa.
And what was their response?
Interesting and incomplete, but what he did concede was that, in fact, he thought that Oxfam is now ready to take a tougher line and to be less ambivalent and less willing to chair the G8. Unfortunately, as you can see, they are among those who are now expressing thanks for what was decided by the finance ministers of the G8, and which will be a keynote of the summit itself in Gleneagles. And unfortunately, the claim that they've changed really is not backed up by the evidence.
Now, the symbol, just for a second, because it's probably something little known in our part of the world, the symbol of the white band that is being used for the Make Poverty History campaign, there was some scandal around it because the band itself was made by forced labor in China. But right. Beyond that, it has a quite different resonance for people in South Africa who fought against the apartheid regime. Could you tell us what the white band symbolizes to people like yourself?
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that, because as you say, people around the world are not aware of that particular aspect of it. When we were organizing in South Africa against the apartheid regime, and we had succeeded in putting together pretty powerful coalition of workers and teachers and students and housewives and trade unionists, which was called UDF, the United Democratic Front. One of the ways in which the apartheid government dealt with the protest was by sending in a bunch of goons or roughnecks to beat up the demonstrators. And they were distinguished by wearing white headbands, so that as a kind of ugly echo for people in South Africa, the reminiscence is not one that they welcome. And the symbolism really is a very unfortunate one. I should add one footnote to that. Ironically, the person who has put together much of the campaigning on the white headband and the white wristband, which is connected for some people to something called the MDG, the Millennial Development Goals. The leader of all this, ironically, is a South African. And if you want to know whose side he's on, I guess it's very revealing that he turned up in Davos at the World Economic Forum, where all the corporate bigwigs get together. He turned up in Davos, in Switzerland, at the WEF, wearing a white headband. And this is, in a way, kind of both comic and, of course, tragic, because it's an unfortunate reminder of the way in which power has been used to crush people in the past.
I heard that at a meeting of grassroots activists in Lusaka in Africa, that there were white bands available for distribution, but that the activists were so disgusted with the conciliatory approach towards the G8 meeting that they, those who were intended to distribute it, decided the better part of valor would just be to forget they had the white bands.
Correct. And in fact, the majority were at what we call the ASF, African Social Forum, which is linked with the WSF, which is the World Social Forum, which is met in Porto Alegre, Brazil, and Mumbai in India. And I was at the meeting in Lusaka of the ASF, where we challenged the fact that the NGOs were being persuaded to get involved in this white headband process without fully realizing that they were really being lined up on the side of the World Bank. And I'm glad to say that many of those, when they discovered this, and in fact the issue also came up in Porto Alegre in Brazil, they said, we want to have nothing to do with it. And they refused to accept the headband.
We've spoken with people in Jubilee USA who told us that from their perspective, the debt cancellation was an important gain. And people may make the argument counter to your perspective that nonetheless, even if it's not a large step forward, it's at least a small step forward. How would you respond to a person who presents that perspective?
I think there's a good deal of truth in it, and so I'm willing to concede 2 points. One is certainly that it is the work we've been doing over the years, campaigning and educating and marching. Certainly, in that sense, we've brought the issue of the burden of debt onto the international agenda, and that is an achievement, and indeed is one I share with the people in the U.S. On the other hand, it's also true that the admission that they're going to cancel this $41 billion burden of unpayable and odious debt, that too is an advance. I concede that, but I'm troubled if you allow that to outweigh the far more serious consideration that this so-called debt cancellation really, one, it's a burden that the country should not have had in the first place, so that the G8 pretends to be virtuous and charitable, when in fact this whole process is of their making. That's point one. And then point two is the one I referred to earlier, that in order to qualify for this cancellation of debt, you have to literally put yourself at the mercy of the global economy, which is a corporate economy. And instead of African countries benefiting, they become even more enslaved and in a sense recolonized, because they are required to perform these various acts which the World Bank refers to as conditionalities. So let's just face the reality. Some small advance, yes, but on the other hand, an enormous struggle still ahead of us, and we should not be applauding and jumping up and down when there's so much more to be done. And I'm glad to note that the Jubilee USA, in its recent statement, has said, this is a small step, and has added, in addition, we have to recognize that there's a long way to go. And this, is, I hope, is where we're going to be sharing common ground. Let me add one point, and I know your time is tight, but I'm hoping, and I will be in Edinburgh for part of the G8 summit, I'm hoping that people there who have been kind of duped into wearing white headbands or various other white symbols, once they understand that this is really not a serious challenge to the global economic order, but instead is a kind of whitewash coming from NGOs that are innocently being drawn in to applaud something which they should not be applauding, I hope that many people will just take off the bands, wristbands, headbands, whatever, and join us. We're having a counter summit in Edinburgh, and I will be speaking at it together with MP Gyosa, who is the chairman of Jubilee South Africa. And we will be saying, get rid of these bands, headbands or wristbands. They can stand instead and demand real action instead of a whitewash.
Now, just as a last question, Dennis, Naomi Klein was speaking earlier this month at an anti-corporate conference in South Africa, and she put forward two contrasting images. She said it was either a choice, it was a choice for social justice activists, either between being a necklace to adorn the G8 summit or aiming to be a noose around their necks. As a poet and as an activist, how did that metaphor, necklace or noose, strike you?
I think it's a very powerful contrast, and I'm glad she made it. But I have to recognize, and I'm sure that many of your listeners will too, that there is also a very ugly image associated with the notion of the necklace. And that is, right here in South Africa, people were killed, sometimes by agents of the apartheid government, in what was called necklacing. So there is that third image, but I think that Naomi made a good point in saying you're either on the side of justice or you're on the side of the old recovery of the new decolonization or recolonization of Africa. That is a very serious debate that we must engage in. And I think her images help us to make it more concrete.
Well, thank you very much, Dennis, and our best wishes for your initiative at Edinburgh. We hope you have great success there.
Thank you. My greetings to your listeners, and thank you for the opportunity.
Most welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Dennis Brutus in Johannesburg. He's a poet and emeritus professor at the University of Pittsburgh. He works with Jubilee South Africa and the Center for Economic Justice there. You can check out an article on the G8 meeting that he co-wrote with Patrick Bond and Virginia Sachedi. You'll find it on the Counterpunch website. It's titled When White Band Spells White Feather, and it was posted on June 17th.